Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance, topics that support the well-being of your young athlete, presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
And we are back on Youth Sports Now, and of course, it is time for Your Peak Performance, and Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training joins us. Hey, Mike, how's it going? It's been going great, and I hear you've been a busy guy today. Let's just start off right there. Should we officially call you Professor?
Definitely not. But Mike Galassano and I from our clinic were invited by Deborah Nowazinski, who is an awesome professor at the Ithaca College Physical Therapy Program, and there last year that PT class comes to Rochester to finish off their last year of training. And we were invited to perform the lab activities with them this week. So the topic was lower extremity, what's called pathokinesiology. So that's patho is bad, what's going wrong, and kinesiology is how the body moves. And so it was really a class about what we do, function.
So how does that differ from biomechanics?
Same, kinesiology, biomechanics are very similar terms. So what we're really looking at was that functional perspective of how we analyze the three planes of motion. We've talked before on the show about the sagittal plane where we move forward and backward, and the frontal plane where we move side to side, and the transverse plane where we twist. And just looking at how we both look at those joints in detail and look at them as a package unit, and try to share with the kids how we can take the foundation they've learned in school and start to apply it to real life situations of a mom picking up her 14-month-old son, for example, or someone going through a golf swing or a baseball swing, and just analyzing things that can go wrong and trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together a little bit better. So the kids did really well, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's obviously a little bit different from being in the clinic all day at Peak Performance. It gets you out. I'm probably it gets you out of the clinic setting, but still keeps you in it with teaching. So we'll just have to start calling you a professor. Hey, Mike. You know, one of the things that we've been talking about in the past few weeks is this ACL injury stuff, and it just seems to continue with more injuries. We actually had a question from one of the listeners asking if an ACL injury is the worst injury that a young athlete can have, other than maybe a concussion. I thought that was a great question for you to jump on.
Well, I think it's sort of pertinent because we hear this all the time about ACL injuries. In fact, on the way over here on the radio, one of the shows was talking about David Watson. He had been on the Bills last year, blew out his ACL. And went to the Bills ended up cutting him after coming back this year. Now he's coming back and playing for the Jets. And so we're constantly hearing this athlete after athlete in the NBA and the NFL and all sorts of sports injuring their ACL. So it's a really commonly discussed injury. I guess I would say the answer, though, is no. It's probably not the worst injury you could do. Any injury, though, that whether it's upper extremity or lower extremity, that requires a surgery and a reconstructive procedure is a pretty serious condition. So a concussion could be mild, it could be really severe, it could be life-altering, or it could be very mild and you're going to go back and play in days. And injuries are the same way. Now, an ACL injury could be a very mild injury, but more often it's a little bit more significant. And unfortunately, very often, it's stretched out or torn enough that it actually does require surgery. But the good news for those people who've had that injury is the great majority are able to go back to athletics if they want to. And there are some injuries, whether it's a very severe fracture or much more complicated ligament injuries, where that may not be the case as often. So I don't think I would say it's the worst injury you could get.
Well, what about this whole idea, Mike, you know, with the ACL injury, or even in something we'll talk about momentarily, the Tommy John surgery? You know, when you're doing rehab of an injury like that, what are some examples of the types of things that you find that aren't oftentimes about the actual surgical knee itself, or aren't on the protocol that we've been talking about?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question, because part of this concept that we've discussed the last week or two has been this idea of protocols and how they give us guidelines. But oftentimes, you know, what we find using that biomechanical knowledge that we have in applied functional science and sort of problem solving the whole system as a package, but being able to look at those joints in detail as well, is that so often, let's say it's a left ACL injury, of course we have to know how to handle the knee. Of course we have to know how to exercise that knee. and what the biological constraints are, and all those sort of issues related to the knee itself. Like we have a microscope or a telescope, a microscope on the knee itself. But it's so critical to understand the rest of the body, like you said in your question. And I'll give you an example of a girl, we'll call her Tricia, that was in recently who had an ACL reconstruction. But when we looked at her more carefully, once she was out of that early healing phase, Greg, we found that when she stood on one leg and she squatted, that one side of her foot, that side of her that she did her ACL on, her foot would collapse considerably inward, and we call that pronation. And the problem with that is that foot that was collapsing inside sort of, you know, the leg bones connected to the foot bone sort of thing. Remember that cartoon?
Right, absolutely.
Well, and that's very true. And so when her foot collapsed in, her knee tended to follow. And so it really looked like, you know, the guy, what I tell the kids is if the guy across the street from our clinic can see inside the window and see your knee doing funny things it shouldn't do, something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very different than her other knee. And we ended up looking at her feet and actually found, even though, yes, she had an ACL, she had a very asymmetric foot structure. The ACL leg had a foot that wanted to collapse very badly and the other foot didn't. Now, can we say proportionally, one-to-one, absolutely the foot caused the knee? No, we know we can't say that with certainty. But I'll tell you what, and the parents agreed when they saw it, and the kid understood it when they looked in the mirror and watched themselves. When you ask that leg to squat or lunge or land from a jump, and on my other side I look pretty stable, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at that leg with the overpronation that was uneven and see that leg rapidly collapse into rotation and into inward movement of the knee. That looks like an ACL. And so, boy, she did so much better once we got an orthotic on her, and that when she did start her running program and her hopping drills, that knee felt so much more stable, and she was so thankful. But in a protocol, if we get too caught up in the specifics of the injury itself, oftentimes we'll miss the other body parts. Another example we talked about before, and we'll call him Johnny, is I had a kid who did his ACL, who on his other side, right, he did his left ACL, well, his right ankle had been sprained a year or two prior. When he got further out and we did some functional testing on him, we found that on his injured knee, Greg, he could squat his knee deep enough that there was a 30-degree angle of bend at his left ankle, the ACL ankle, which was pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
But oddly enough, Greg, we found that the ankle that he had sprained 2 years ago, and he had told us, boy, I feel fine. Nothing's wrong with that ankle. I feel great.
Sure.
He actually squatted worse on his quote-unquote good leg, and he only had about a 20-degree angle on that side. So when you'd watch him squat or lunge or land on the good leg, you would see him check up and hold back. Now, what's going to happen when that kid is running rapidly and he has to decelerate or he's jumping? And internally, unconsciously, he's sort of avoiding that right side that his body knows can't land as deeply, and he's going to repeatedly start landing on the left side more and deeper because that's the side he's got depth on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a legitimate question. Can we say again with certainty that the right ankle caused the knee? I don't think we can quite say that. But boy, we had to work a bit at getting that right ankle to bend better. And with some hands-on techniques and with proper stretching, you know, we went quote-unquote outside the protocol.
Sure.
And having understood biomechanics, we could do that. We're not going to treat them like a number and say, here's the ACL list of things to do. But we've got to really try to look at their body and understand. And that's why we love protocols. As I said mm-hmm. in the blog post, if people go on the website and check those out, we can love protocols because they give us some guidelines and a foundation and a perspective as to where the surgeon may be. But we also hate them. You know, and that's just because sometimes as professionals, whether it's a physician or a therapist, it's easy to get caught up in reading the dates and the list of things to do and not stepping back, looking at the big picture. And remember, this is a human body. There's human biomechanics and anatomy going on. Let's look at the big picture and not get caught
sure.
up in just that knee.
Well, somebody knew what they were doing when they connected all this together when they created the human body, that's for sure. Hey, let's move up now, knowing that we could spend the next 6 hours talking about this, but let's move up the body from the ACL and the knee up to the shoulder and the arm area. I think this is a great question. We always name things, and we've currently named Tommy John surgery, or you've got a Tommy John injury. what the heck is a Tommy? I mean, I know he's a former player for the Yankees, and yeah, I did say Yankees for those who know I'm a Red Sox fan. But, you know, what is Tommy John surgery? And, you know, I know a lot of young kids who are actually having that surgery.
Absolutely. That surgery is named after Tommy John, who was a pitcher back in the 70s. Who
Thanks for
up,
dating me, Mike. I appreciate that.
Well, I was around back then, too. He injured his elbow, his pitching elbow, and the ulnar collateral ligament, UCL, is the name for the ligament that he injured. And if you hold your arm out in front of you and turn your palm up, that would be on the inside. So if your right arm is held up in front of you, the left side of your right elbow is where that ulnar collateral ligament is. And if you bend your right hand out to the right, sort of so your elbow bows, so the elbow joint moves inward and your hand is outward, that's a bowing of your elbow that happens similar to what happens when you pitch. And as pitchers repeatedly over and over are whipping their arm at thousands of degrees per second, there's a lot of force that goes through all the ligaments, and the elbow is one of the places that can take a hit. Well, Tommy John blew out, like an ACL, you blow the ligament out, you stretch it, you pull it, you separate it. He did that to the elbow. And so he saw a Dr. Job, and they wanted to do something with this to try and get it fixed. And they decided to try to reconstruct that ligament. And so the procedure to fix that tear is called the Tommy John procedure.
Okay.
It would almost be like if the very first ACL that was ever done, someone named it after somebody. But the ulnar collateral ligament in the elbow was popularized by this procedure done by Dr. Job on Tommy John's elbow. And originally, it's interesting, I read something that said Job gave him a 1 in 100 chance of going back and playing.
Right.
He had it done in 74. He played until 89, pitched another 160-something games, and he retired in 1989 at the age of 46 as a professional pitcher. So it became a popularized way to help pitchers fix that elbow.
So let's take this a step further now. I mean, not everybody's going to have the success that Tommy John had with this surgery, but what are the chances, and I'm not asking you, obviously, because every person is an individual. You know, I am aware of three kids who at age 12, 14, and 18 have all had Tommy John surgery. What are the chances of those kids coming back even to half of what they were? Is it better or worse because they're younger?
Well, certainly when you're younger, your body is in this growing mode where healing is occurring, where growth is occurring. And anytime kids have surgeries, they typically heal quicker and better than we may as adults, because that active growth process is still occurring. So that's one factor. Certainly over time now, you know, surgical techniques have advanced and gotten more technical, and the materials they use have gotten better. So in fact, these days now, and I think it was a 2009 study, and I don't remember exactly the population that was used, what ages they were, but their return rates to their sports, and usually it's baseball, those were like 80 to 90-plus percent. So the chances of getting back are very good, but certainly everyone doesn't go back. Everyone may not go back to their same exact position. Obviously, the popular group that happens to is pitchers, and that's the most violent thing you could do and most voluminous throwing you could do in the position of baseball player. So, you know, maybe some will go back and not play that position, or some choose not to. We've talked about the psychology of injury before. Some kids don't want to go back to that risk. They just want to go back and play the game.
Right. Well, I don't want to negate or to minimize the Tommy John stuff, so maybe we can continue that as we move into next week. But one thing I want to get into in about a minute and a half that we have left is, you know, you're doing some pretty cool stuff on the sports training side of things. You were telling me off air about this volleyball program or volleyball team that you're working with, that you and your wife Karen are working with at Peak Performance. What's that about?
Well, our daughter Amanda is playing for Paradigms Volleyball Club. It's a girls' volleyball travel team. They'll run starting in December, start practicing, and then begin doing weekend tournaments, and they'll run through maybe June or July. So there's a number of clubs in the area. And many of those clubs contract with, you know, various facilities or people to help them with sports training. So it's really a well-organized process. They'll go and they'll train volleyball skills and teamwork things 2 days a week. And as part of those practices, we'll do some conditioning. So we've been contracted with the Paradigm Group to help them with their sports conditioning program. So we'll be doing injury prevention work with them, sort of sports performance work with them, helping them do the right sort of stretches, help them do the right sort of warm-up things, work on agility and footwork and quickness and core control, balance, reactive, change of direction, power, the things that young athletes need, but they want to have people who are skilled and knowledgeable help direct them in the right way. So they'll spend 30 minutes of each practice, 2 days a week, doing a team session.
Very cool. Well, one of the things that I want to hear about next week, maybe we can continue the Tommy John stuff, but also I want to hear what it's like doing that with your daughter as a member of the team. I know what that's like coaching my son years ago, but that would be aging me again. Hey, when we come back on U Sports Now, we'll have a final thought or two from my dugout, and we'll finish off the show with some pretty heavy thoughts on Major League Sports.
You're listening to Youth Sports Now on WYSL.
One man come in the name of love. One man come and go. One man come here to justify.